We will call the meeting back to order. We will go to item number 19, public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
No public comment in Elko.
Do we have public comment in Las Vegas?
Yes, we do have public comment in Las Vegas.
Please approach the podium, state your name, and you have 2 minutes.
Good morning, Chancellor and Regents. My name is Kimberly Padilla Estrada. Padilla is P-A-D-I-L-L-A. Estrada is E-S-T-R-A-D-A. I'm an undergrad student at Nevada State. I wrote my comment down, so I'm going to be looking down for a little bit. I'm here today to express my strong support for the Student Transportation Pilot Program. I myself have been an undergrad student at not only Nevada State College, but as well as College of Southern Nevada and University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and I can say confidently that this program is something that is desperately needed at all three institutions. And even though I'm now blessed to have a car, I still see the need for myself and my peers who are also low-income students. Just yesterday I was at Nevada State at one of my classes, and I come out of my classes and I see that I'm having car issues. My class gets out at 9 p.m., so public transportation was not an option. I did have to take an Uber home, and it was almost $40. And at that moment, I just thought about my fellow peers and other low-income students who maybe don't even have a car, and non-traditional students who would probably have to take night classes like I do. For low-income and first-generation students and non-traditional students as well, transportation has the potential of derailing our education. This is why today I would like to thank the Lieutenant Governor and her staff, RTC, the institutions that took part of this process, President Patterson, as well as Student Body President Nicola Opfer for tackling this issue. This program can truly help thousands of students. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Good morning, Chairman, Regents, and respective guests. My name is Sheila Carver. Sheila spelled S-H-E-I-L-A and Carver, C-A-R-V-E-R. And I'm a recent graduate from UNLV. I graduated this past spring with my master's degree, and I'm here today to voice my support for the pilot program. As a former college student, transportation was a major issue for me throughout my throughout undergraduate and graduate school. I have a really old car, so it's not very reliable, and I also had to share it with other individuals. And this impacted not only my ability to participate in extracurricular activities, but also it significantly increased my commute time because I'm not able to drive on the freeway, so it takes significantly longer taking just main roads to get to UNLV. and the other two options that I had were, you know, either taking public bus, which would have been about 3 hours each day commuting, or taking a rideshare such as Uber or Lyft, and that's very expensive when you go to the campus 4 or 5 times a week. So that's why I think students really need the pilot program, because I know other students and myself need to have better transportation opportunities, and that enables us to get to the different colleges and cuts down on your commute time as well as is cost effective. So I'd like to thank you for your time and considering my input on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next.
Good morning, Chairman, Regents, and respective guests. My name is Jocelyn Guevas. Jocelyn, J-O-S-E-L-I-N-E, Guevas, C-U-E-V-A-S. I am here today to voice my support for the Student Transportation Pilot Program. I am a student at UNLV, and I know what it's like to deal with transportation issues. My freshman year, I had an 8 a.m. class, and I had no car ride to get to school. So I would have to take a bus at 6 a.m. in order to barely get to my class. If I was ever to miss my second bus, I would have to end up missing my first class. My last class would end at 3:45, and by the time I would get home, it'd be 6. And again, if the bus was early and I was to miss it, I would get home later, at sometimes even at 8 at night. My my Tuesdays and Thursdays class, it was only one class. So the transportation time to get there was a lot more time than what I actually spent in class. This made it harder for me to have more time to spend studying and being active in school. So with these issues, I know that I'm privileged now to be able to either have a car to get to school or a ride, but I know that many students don't, and this cuts down on a lot of study time. So I would also like to thank the Lieutenant Governor and her staff of the ROTC, the institutions that took part of this process, but most importantly, President Marta Mina and the student body President Hannah, because I know we will do what's best for the students of Southern Nevada. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Good morning, Chancellor Riley, Regents, and respective guests. My name is Aranza Marmolejo, spelled A-R-A-N-Z-A, Marmolejo, M-A-R-M-O-L-E-J-O. I'm here today also to voice my support for the Student Transportation Pilot Program. I am students at Nevada State College, especially low-income first-generation students, face several challenges, but transportation has the potential of derailing our educational journey. My freshman year of college, I did not have a car and had an 8 a.m. class Monday through Thursday. I had to wake up every morning at 5 a.m. like Jocelyn to catch my bus ride at 6 in the morning for my 8 a.m. class. The bus ride from my house to Nevada State College was 2 hours there and then 2 hours back. When I would miss the bus, I would, you know, have to resort to taking Ubers or Lyfts, which, as you have heard from my fellow peers, are expensive when taken a lot. And at times, I didn't have the funds to even pay for Ubers and Lyfts, and I would ultimately have to not go to class. I now have a car and see the need for this pilot program because I understand the struggle for transportation. I would also like to thank the Lieutenant Governor and her staff, the ROTC, the institutions that took part of this process, but more importantly, President Bart Patterson and the student body president, NSA Chair Nicola Opfer, because together, again, we can tackle this issue together and help thousands of students like how I was once a freshman and had no car. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Good afternoon, Chancellor Riley, regents, and respective guests. My name is Andrew Sierra, and today I come to you as a concerned student. As you have all heard here today, transportation is definitely a barrier to higher education. Students, specifically those who are minorities, low-income, and first-generation, just like myself, often find themselves pausing their educational journey, one reason for that being transportation. In a survey conducted among students, 75% of both current and prospective students agreed that transportation is and is perceived as a barrier to higher education. 78% of students supported the Student Transportation Pilot Program, and 52% of them agreed to supporting a transportation fee to fund the program. Considering that students have agreed to fund the program and that institutions can implement fees under $50 without the approval of the board, I see no valid reason for this proposal not to move forward. We are desperate for something like this and plead you to take our money. As many of you know, for the past 2 years, I have had to rely on rideshare apps like Uber to get me from school to campus or from one campus to another. As a result, I have spent over $7,000 on simply being able to get me to school. Mind you, the majority of these rides were the carpool option, which often forced me to leave my destination 30 minutes to an hour early to make sure I was on time. If we truly care about students and are willing to do what's necessary to expand access and increase equity, I hope to see every institution and staff member and NSHE support this project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Jason Elias, E-L-I-A-S, once again from the American Association of University Professors, Chief Negotiator for College of Southern Nevada. College of Southern Nevada, Nevada Faculty Alliance chapter. I first want to say we fully support the transportation pilot that the students are talking about, and lend our support to that. I also want to acknowledge, in addition to my comments yesterday, that the Chancellor, Chancellor Riley, has met with myself as well as president of our chapter at CSN, Jennifer Nelson, and Adrian Havas, who's our statewide president. And so we really thank the Chancellor in wanting to get to yes for a collective bargaining agreement. I think the discussion is where it needs to be going. We're not there yet, but we want to get there. Certainly, Jennifer will talk a little bit about the binding arbitration issue. I want to be clear, we're not talking about binding arbitration of contracts, which is set by state law. The bill did not pass for us in this legislative session. We hope in the next one it will, where we'll have binding arbitration over contract disputes. What I'm talking about is grievances. So, it is very, very common. Almost 100% of collective bargaining agreements between administration and faculty and workers in the United States have binding arbitration in their contracts. Nevada system of higher education is unfortunately an outlier in that regard. We're asking the regents to help us move forward. That's what we're doing. So I did offer Chair Geddes for you to meet along with us to help move it forward. I think it would be fruitful if the chancellor and the chair met with Nevada Faculty Alliance to make this happen. Thank you for your attention. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Next.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Jennifer Nelson from CSN, and I am here today to speak to the issue of our stalled contract negotiations. We've been bargaining our contract for about 34 months now. I was really heartened yesterday to see that WNC's contract got approved by the Board of Regents, and I hope that one day very soon we'll have a similar celebration. I think it's a sign that when people commit to the collaboration and cooperation that's at the core of shared governance, good things can happen. However, as I've noted, in my 19 years at CSN, I've also noticed some failures of shared governance that I believed could have been avoided if we had gone through a collective bargaining process and achieved a fair contract. The question, of course, is what is a fair contract? And I can't go into all those details, but I want to remind you that history shows that binding grievance arbitration is a strong component of a fair contract. In U.S. labor history, industrial unions during World War II agreed to give up their rights to strike because their work was so necessary. And the compromise for that was to be given binding grievance arbitration in their contracts. Currently, ANSI is experiencing many calls among the community for greater accountability for the work that teachers and administrators do. I think that is a vital, important component of shared governance. And I think that binding grievance arbitration plays a role in that by giving us the opportunity for our most intractable disputes to be overseen and reviewed and perhaps resolved by an impartial third party. So as you heard my colleague Jason Alliance discuss, we'll be speaking with regents over the next several weeks and try and get some feedback from you about the possibilities for having our contract include a binding grievance arbitration component. Thank you for your time today listening to me. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment in Las Vegas?
No more public comment in Las Vegas.
Thank you. We will come up to Carson City. Is there public comment in Carson City? Please approach the podium, state your name. You have 2 minutes, sir.
My name is Lars Jensen, professor of mathematics at TMCC. I would like to address an abuse of the phase-in retirement plan at TMCC. It appears to me clearly that the TMCC administration is improperly using phase-in retirement policy as a political tool against senior faculty. By not approving more than 2 to 3 year phase-in, except for special cases, the administration has chosen to forgo a substantial windfall in favor of having a tool with which to punish faculty. Analysis has shown that phase-in retirement saved money for the institutions. Every FTE saved from phase-in retirement pays for 1.3 replacement FTE. Phase-in retirement produces a windfall for the college up to $10,000 to $20,000 per year per phase-in retiree. Phase-in retirement is financially and academically as well beneficial for the departments and the college. I'll forward documentation of these facts in one of three emails to you all today. At TMCC, some faculty receive phase-in retirement per their request. Others, faculty, do not. Some get 2 to 3 years, others 5 years. Others are given special privileges to spend their phase-in retirement teaching online from Hawaii or Mexico. The TMCC administration denies faculty phase-in retirement requests without providing reasons. And if pressed for a reason, the faculty member may be threatened, as in my case, with a formal reprimand. I summarize the TMCC administration is using the phase-in retirement policy as a political and retaliatory tool against some faculty. I do not believe this is the intent of the code. I strongly believe that phase-in retirement programs should be standardized and codified so that all interested faculty members are treated consistently and with equal opportunity. Pending this standardization, I request that my case will be just one sentence. I request that my case, as well as those of others, will be reviewed for fairness and consistency.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Other public comment?
Hello, my name is Jeff Downs. I'm with Western Nevada College. And I just wanted to step out of my current role as the Chief Enrollment and Student Success Officer to my role, what I was before this happened, as the Chief Negotiator for the Nevada Faculty Alliance for Western Nevada College. And I want to thank the Board of Regents for supporting our contract that we came to an agreement with. And I want to thank President Solis and his administration for working with us on a contract. It took us a while to develop, but under his leadership, we came to a very good conclusion. So I want to thank everyone for that and look forward to going forward together. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Western Nevada College. I'm Kyle Dalpe, the Vice President of Instruction. I wanted to give a shout out to Oasis Academy in Fallon, who are on their way here today, but between here and Fallon, there's construction, there's horses crossing the road. They are about 4 minutes out. They were hoping to bring a group of students on their way to a leadership summit to come and thank the board for your support of dual credit programs. Part of the reason we are up 20% in Fallon is because of the Oasis Academy, which borders right next to the Fallon campus. So if you could, a little bit in about maybe 2 minutes, when they come in the back, if you could give them a wave, I'm sure they would appreciate it, and then they'll continue on their day. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment here in Carson City? All right. I'm going to turn. Regent McAdoo.
I just had a question. Would it be possible that we could let the students speak to us when they come in? Just please. Thank you.
Thank you.
They're what we're about.
We will reopen public comment when they get here to hear from one or two of them.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily close. Vice Chancellor Abba, you had a statement to make?
Thank you. For the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor. Don't look so scared, Regent Trachalk. For the record, Crystal Abba, Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs. Yesterday, under Agenda Item 20, the board asked where the authority is vested for approval of salary schedules and the development of those schedules. I indicated that that authority lies with the board, and that is incorrect. I've asked the chairman for the opportunity to correct the record. According to the code, Chapter 5, Section 5.1, that authority actually lies with the chancellor. It does, however, require that salary schedules and the development process after the fact be presented to this board. The provisions for the code change that were presented yesterday under Agenda Item 20 are consistent consistent with that in remaining that the chancellor would continue to have that authority. So I wanted to make sure that the board was aware of that consistency in the proposal. Thank you for the opportunity to correct the record, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And I want to make a quick note before people start trying to catch their flights later in the day. We're really thankful for Western Nevada College and the hospitality they've shown all of us, the faculty, the staff, the students, have been great everywhere, giving us directions, pointing us, turning us around when we're going the wrong way. Very helpful. And specifically, I'd like to thank from the President's Office, President Solis, Deb Conrad, Kelly Kiso, Chelsea Hamtak, Heather Riccolo, from WNCIT, Ryan Swain, Sunghai Liu, from Simple Fare, Chef Mitchell Tufts and his crew, and Sonia Zacharias, from Facilities, Buildings and Grounds and Custodial, Kevin Gaffney, Robert Connerby. I knew I would ruin one, and that was the easy one. Dustin Cheney, Robert Martinez, from Police Services, Sergeant Christopher Nero, from WNC Foundation and Division of Learning and Innovation, Nikki Gladys, Denise Froelich, and as I already mentioned, all of the volunteers who've been around campus and getting us around. And, of course, for every meeting, we have the support of SES, Danny Chandler, Rick Romero, Claudio Osanaga, Dan Wilkins, Brian Anzalone, CC, Gary Casale, Edwin Lennon, and from TST, James Russ, Mark Dudzik, and, of course, all of our board staff who make sure everything functions. And when you sneak in at 6 a.m. and they're here working, you know how much effort they put in to make sure all of our meetings go well. Thanks. Are they closed, Kyle? In other words, I'm going to have to close it. All right. With that, we will close public comment. We will go to item number 14, Handbook Revision Intellectual Property, Chief General Counsel Reynolds. And before we move on to that, Dingle, as far as Regent Carter.
Regent Carter, did you have something you wanted to say about the IP policy, please?
Absolutely. I was previously a student of the gaming innovation course at UNLV where I developed a casino game. If that game is marketed and sold, I'll be required to pay UNLV in the form of shared royalties pursuant to a standard contract that all students in the course were required to sign. I'll receive no remuneration from UNLV. I disclose this relationship under NRS Chapter 281A as recommended by the Nevada Ethics Commission. As this relates to the intellectual property policy, I will abstain.
Thank you. Chief General Counsel Reynolds.
Good morning. Joe Reynolds, NC Chief General Counsel for the record. And with me also is Brooke Nielsen, my predecessor, who has provided some invaluable assistance with this matter. We're bringing this back to the board is a continuation of our conversation that the board had on July 19th on the special meeting regarding the IP policy and creating a pathway for commercialization for our research institutions and a robust pathway to achieve that goal. The policy that is before the board, or at least the one that I'm referring to, is the one that was distributed as a supplemental material earlier this week, not the original policy that was posted with the agenda. Guiding the rewrite of this policy has been to provide for flexibility, simplicity, and balance between robust commercialization pathways, again, for the institutions, and also some protections and checks in that process. And so what you have before you is four options when one of the institutions has intellectual property developed. The first one is to transfer it, convey it, assign it into a 501c3 corporation. And to do that with five protections: that the 501c3 be created for the benefit of the institution, to act at all times in the best interest of the institution. It's prohibited from obligating the board in INCHI and the institution to a commitment of funds. It obviously has to comply with all state, federal laws and policies. And then fifth, that it's required to indemnify and hold harmless the board, the institutions, and INCHI for any subsequent transfers or delegations to third parties. In 4B, then it discusses third-party transfers, because what we want is the ability of the institutions after these ideas have been developed is to market them in a marketplace. And what we've heard in discussions with the folks that do this is that businesses who look at being involved in intellectual property is they want some predictability. They want some uncertainty, the certainty in that process. And so we've rewritten this policy to give those signals to those possible business partners. In providing for the third-party transfers, it's required that it be signed off by the institution president, the intellectual property administrator, as well as being reviewed by the institution's general counsel. The third option is if the institution's not interested in commercializing directly through the 501c3 corporation, they can assign, transfer, convey the intellectual property to the researchers or the faculty members themselves who developed this, again, with the consent and approval of the president, the IP administrator, and review by the institution's general counsel. And the last option is that the institution can relinquish the IP property into the public realm, in the public domain. And I believe that this policy has the support of our research institutions, and be happy to answer any questions, or I might defer to Ms. Nielsen on certain questions as well.
Thank you. Do we have a motion for approval? Motion from Regent Trachok, second from Regent Page. Any questions or comments on it? Regent Carvalho, then Regent Moran.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say thank you for bringing this agenda item back to the board. I think that we had some healthy discussions, and the result of it is a much better policy. So thank you for the collaboration and the openness to redo this policy. Thank you.
Regent Moran.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I agree with Board Member Carvalho. I appreciate you taking a little extra time to kind of vet the language out, the content. The dialogue was great. I understand from the presidents that they're all on board. I understand now that the research institutes are also on board. I like that kind of dialogue. I like that communication. So I appreciate you guys working hard to iron it out, drill it down, and it looks it's in a format that I feel comfortable with as well at this point. So I would be in support of the motions as well, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Aye.
Motion passes with an abstention from Regent Carter. Thank you very much. We're going to go back to item number 19, public comment. Is there any public comment in ELCO?
No public comment in ELCO.
Is there any public comment in Carson City? Please approach the podium, state your name. You have 2 minutes.
Sorry for our lateness. Our bus driver had some issues. So, good morning. My name is Emily Richards, and I'm a senior and student body president at Oasis Academy College Preparatory High School in Fallon, Nevada, a rural agricultural community about 62 miles east of here. On behalf of Oasis, I would like to thank the Nevada System of Higher Education for supporting dual enrollment, especially in rural communities. Our community is considered an underserved population because of how rural we are. Currently at Oasis, we have 116 students dually enrolled. Of those students, 80% are on track to graduate with their associates, and 27% are on track to earn a CTE certification. The graduation rate at Oasis for the 2018-2019 school year was 100%. Of those graduates, 67% not only earned their high school diploma, but also an associate's degree, and 47% earned a CTE certification at no additional cost to them or their families. This is an amazing and affordable opportunity to be able to receive our associate's degree or be a part of the CTE certifications programs such as welding, certified nursing assistant, cybersecurity, and ag mechanics. I personally have benefited from the Jumpstart program because I feel that it has challenged me academically and prepared me for a four-year university. It has also helped my college application stand out among my peers. I am the second member of my family to receive my associate's degree from the Western Nevada Fallon campus while in high school. My parents truly appreciate the value of this education. OASIS appreciates all the WNC staff members for encompassing our hectic high school schedules, as many of us participate in traditional high school clubs such as yearbook, FFA, student council, and a variety of high school sports on top of a full college schedule. A few issues I'm experiencing this semester is classes being canceled at the last minute, new classes being added after the semester has started, and the IAV classes, which continuously lose audio or video feed and make it hard to understand the content. I would like to thank you all for giving us and Fallon the opportunity to be a part of dual enrollment.
Thank you very much. And thank you all for stopping by, and good luck.
Thank you.
Is there any public comment in Las Vegas?
There's no public comment in Las Vegas.
Thank you. We will close public comment, and we will go to item number 22, Institutional Metrics, University of Nevada, Reno. President Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Geddes and Board. We appreciate very much this opportunity once a year to give an institutional overview. We'll be getting a program up here on the screen here in a moment, I believe. And there we are. Please be aware that the metrics that we have here are preliminary in that not all of our FY19 financials are complete, and our actual census of enrollment will be Monday, the 9th of September. So we have a lot of asterisks on our estimates of these numbers. I will review the context and then move through the achievement of some of the goals by way of metrics. We are a national Tier 1 university, remarkable for student success, world-improving research, and community engagement. And this is measured as we go into 9 years of being recognized by U.S. News & World Report in the top tier ranking among best national universities. For the first time this year, we graduated more than 5,000 degrees. We are recognized by the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching as an arts and sciences and professions balanced institution, which is very important to us because we do offer a lot of degrees across the arts and sciences, basic degrees in addition to professions of journalism, nursing, agriculture, engineering, and the like. And we have these other features as well. Our big goals since 2013 have been very consistent, and we've been investing deeply in each of these three goals. And that's why it's important that we repeat these goals, the first being that we respond to a growing enrollment primarily from Nevada students, and that we offer a really fine experiential learning experience for each of our students. And this requires a more intense faculty-student relationship by focusing on getting the institution down to the median average of student-to-faculty ratio of 18 to 1, as our peers have. Second is to become a really impactful research university with vibrant graduate programs, as measured by the classification of Carnegie R1. And finally, to really reach out and be a pillar of economic development by interacting with businesses and community leaders throughout. These goals parallel the region's goals of access, success, closing the achievement gap, workforce development, and research, as we will see throughout this presentation. Better check my time here. So the access function is to increase participation in post-secondary education. The reason is that we have a growing state. We need to make sure that we are serving all qualified students by opening our doors to them regardless of their situation of economics or other features, ethnicity, low income, first generation. We make our doors open to everyone who is qualified for a university education. And we need the workforce, of course, and the 18 to 1 gives us that student-to-faculty ratio that allows more faculty interaction with students, which is the real foundation of learning. So you'll see by our enrollment headcount, the blue line, that over the last two falls, we've fallen a bit, but not greatly, in our student headcount. But still, over this 10-year period, we've been up by about 25% in headcount and 35% in terms of full-time equivalents of classes actually being taken. The composition of our students is changing somewhat in that our undergraduate enrollment is down a bit. Our graduate enrollment offsets that because we've had significant increase in graduate enrollment in both online and on-campus enrollment of graduate students. We still maintain a very well-prepared student body in that you can see the average ACTs of our freshmen and the average GPAs of our freshmen continue on a very positive trajectory of getting stronger all the time. The number of national merit Presidential and National Hispanic Scholars, the really very well-prepared students, continues to grow at a rapid rate. We now have 687 of these preliminarily enrolled on our campus for this fall. We help with access by giving out $170 million a year in student financial aid in these types of aid. 45% is in one-way scholarships and grants, 55% in loans, and you can see the sources of those funds, state funds being primarily the Millennium Scholarship, where two-thirds of our students are coming in as freshmen on the Millennium Scholarship. In terms of credits, we really believe in the 15 to finish concept. We've converted it to 30 to complete, so that people can take winter semester and summer school to make up their 30 credits a year and still graduate in 4 years. You'll see that our new freshmen sign up for about 16 credits a term, and overall we've been holding pretty steadily at almost 14 credit hours for each student each semester. The idea of success is to increase the number of students who actually get degrees. Again, we return to support throughout the college career with financial assistance. You can see here that we rely on our foundation to collect scholarships, and they provide about $12 million a year in scholarships. You can also see the number of people on aid or the proportions of people on aid. Three-quarters of our students have some kind of aid, whether it's need-based or merit-based, and 23% of all of our students are on Pell. A third of our undergraduates and a third of our graduate students are on loans, which goes along with the notion that in Nevada, and Nevada ranks in a very good position of having among the fewest proportion of students who have debt when they graduate from college of any of the 50 states. We rank like 47th. In the country in terms of proportion of students coming out of Nevada institutions with debt. The Nevada FIT program has been one of those programs that Provost Kevin Carman has brought to us, and we've done this since 2006. It's the freshman intensive transition. It's a five-day before the fall experience. It's very intense. It has a real objective of showing all of our freshmen that this isn't high school anymore. They experience classes, they experience homework, they experience tests, they experience social activities, study groups, and the like, about how to become a college student. And we have very good results with this program. You see fall-to-fall retention in all but one group has been enhanced by participating in the FIT program. The blue bars show the retention rate of the various ethnic groups, and the orange bars or yellow bars are those who do not go through the FIT program. So it is encouraging to go through the FIT program and really get serious about college, and they tend to do well in their first semester. In terms of graduation rates from the first cohorts going
President
through
Johnson,
the FIT.
Just one second. Regent Page.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. President, why do you think that one group is lower going through the FIT?
We're studying that. We can't figure that out because it's inconsistent. But we are, Provost Carmen is looking at that particular issue and trying to get an answer. And so I'll commit to you that we'll give you what we learn.
Thank you.
So for those in the early cohorts who did the FIT program, we have stronger four-year graduation rates and five-year graduation rates than those who don't go through the FIT program. And you may think that those who go through the FIT program are just more motivated than the others, but we also, in the early years, took a group of students who applied for the FIT program that showed the motivation, but we didn't have enough spots for them, and we compared the retention rates for those who got into the program and those who didn't get in the program but wanted to be there, and it showed the same results, that we had better retention. So, but we will check the one group. I want to emphasize again the importance of having a strong student-to-faculty ratio and providing an education with lots of hands-on experiential learning. And I'm going to show you a 30-second clip that you will see in the college highlights on television when we have sporting events of UNR versus any other school. And the reason I like this 30-second ad is because it shows our focus not on sports but on experiential learning.
How do you become America's newest Carnegie R1 Research University?
Go where knowledge leads.
How do you solve the world's most pressing problems?
Go where knowledge leads.
How do you reach the top of your field or profession?
Go where knowledge leads.
The answer is simple.
Go where knowledge leads.
When you understand your future is powered by knowledge, you go where knowledge leads. The University of Nevada, Reno.
Thanks very much. We're doing other things in addition to really deepen our knowledge. One is that in 2015, we started a real focus on our writing and speaking initiative. We've added more instructors in the composition and rhetoric section of the Department of English. We have more instructors, more doctoral graduate students. We have really encouraged a growth in the graduate program in writing and composition because that is the highest employment field in, from the Department of English. We've reoriented our writing center, which is a tutoring center, to be a writing and speaking center so that students can learn and get individual assistance in improving their writing and their speaking skills. And we even continue to really support a nationally competitive debate team. A real important new feature of this is to do a better job at infusing additional writing at the sophomore and junior level between freshman English and the capstone course so that they can improve their communication skills in all 4 years of their college experience. Another important feature for retaining students is to provide housing and all of the programming that goes with dormitories. You heard yesterday why it was so important for us to have a Wolfpack Tower where we could house all of our students and provide that experiential freshman experience. And we have some data here. Take the top panel showing the impact of having students live on campus during that first year. So the retention rates on freshmen you see for the fall 18 to the 19 return is a 4% gain, and if you look at the bottom panel, for those students who are transferring in and get into student housing, there's better than a 10% increase in the retention rates of those transfer students. So we've always focused on freshmen and transfer students getting into housing because of this impact on student retention. Graduation rates are doing well. You see that we've had a strong retention rate increase over time, holding now. We anticipate it's going to be 82% from fall 18 to fall 19. If you look at our four-year and six-year graduation rates, those are also are on a very positive trend. We anticipate that we're going to hold the four-year graduation rate at 37% and even go over 60% in our six-year graduation rate for the 2013 and 15 cohorts. Just to encapsulate the 10-year growth, if you look at the 10-year growth and the four-year graduation rate, we've more than doubled that four-year graduation rate in that 10 years and have a substantial increase in the six-year graduation rate because we intentionally try to get students to take the full credit load.
I have a question, President Johnson. What is the four-year graduation rate for our peer institutions at Nevada Reno?
The median of peer institutions is 58%. So we've been running around 58%, and because of the emphasis on four-year graduation rate, we're on the high edge of the median. If you take a place like Davis that has a very, very high entry requirement, they have a much higher rate. They have 85 or 90% six-year graduation rate, which is fine, but we keep our doors open to all students. So of those peers at public institutions with pretty open rates like New Mexico, Utah, and the like, we're right in there with our peers.
And the same question as to the four-year graduation rates from the peers?
I don't have a comparison there. Okay. I apologize. Proof is in the pudding. You can see here that we have continually increased the total number of graduates. If you add up medical, PhD, master's, and undergraduates, for the first time in this history, we've crossed the 5,000 degree mark. So we've been continually growing our success. In terms of faculty, we've been growing the faculty, and you'll see that the student-to-faculty ratio there on the bottom for last year was 19-1, and we were making progress through those years. And by adding 235 faculty since the fall of 14 and a slight dip in our total undergraduate enrollment, our undergraduate student-to-faculty ratio has finally reached this goal in our anticipation for next week's census figure to 18-1. And this is very important to us as we balance off the faculty and numbers of faculty with the growth in our student body over the last 10 years. Importantly, when we added faculty, 80% of those faculty have been tenure track faculty that also contribute to our research goal at the same time.
Regent Trejak.
President Johnson, what is the cause of the decline, the slight decline in enrollment from 16 to 19, from 21,353 to 21,072?
We think the major reason has to do with the general demographics nationally of turning out fewer high school seniors than in previous years. And we've worked with Applied Analytics, Jeremy Aguero's group, and he's anticipating, his projection are that will turn back around in the fall of 22 or 23. But it's just a national phenomenon that all the schools are suffering right now. That's the major issue. So this is a market share game. So we have to really ramp up our recruiting efforts, our scholarship efforts, and be much more focused on the types of students that fit our institution really well. Our alumni giving and development in alumni giving is off a bit these last few years. The 2014 is when we had a couple of capital projects, and we're anticipating getting a couple of capital projects going in this very year, so we would anticipate that the private giving would be better for FY20. Closing the gap is very important to us and remains a significant challenge to us. We want every one of our students that comes to the campus to graduate, and we want to make sure that all groups, regardless of their initial circumstance, get set on a road to graduation. You can see our ethnic diversity here continues to grow. You can see the 10-year growth pattern by ethnic group, and the black non-Hispanic and the Hispanic have grown significantly. The multi-ethnic is all self-reported. So all of these major ethnic groups have grown in the attractiveness of the university to these groups. We see now in the last column that 41% of our students are students of color, and that has been a percent that has been increasing on a regular basis. We also have other forms of diversity in terms of international students that are not growing, and we continue to work with trying to find a firm that will help us in the international recruiting territory. Our Pell Grant students are almost double what they were 10 years ago. Disabled students are 3.5 times what they were a few years ago. And students tell us now that because of the services through our Disabilities Resource Center, UNR is a school of choice because they can get the help they need, either for learning disabilities or physical disabilities. We've also grown a number of freshmen. So we have a number of programs, some of them in middle school and high school, and some of them continuing into college, that really encourage students to get access and be successful. And many of these programs are disproportionately affecting students in these groups where we have challenges with equal graduation rates. The Dean's Future Scholars Program, you can see the different programs that we have, the numbers of individuals in them, both at the middle school, MS as middle school and high school students, and then some continuing as college students. I'd like to, you can read these, and you've already read them, but just to emphasize again, we have the TRIO program, but we have a limit of 186 students that can enter the TRIO program on campus and get the support they need for first-generation low-income students. But since we have more programs, Dr. Shannon Ellis has created a program called First in the Pack, and we have almost as many students who qualify for TRIO, can't get into the TRIO program, that we support those students and add them with the same kind of counseling and mentoring and social space that the TRIO students have. So the TRIO students do quite well. They get academic counseling, tutoring, and advising. From fall 17 to 18, 99% were retained, and continuing good academic standing is 98%, and the six-year graduation rate 73%, which is much higher than even the 60% that we expect. The McNair Scholars Program is part of the TRIO program, encouraging ethnic minority students to get involved in graduate education, and you can see here that our program is very attractive to students, and we have performance measures that are even beyond the federal goals, with 100% of this particular class went on to graduate school, which would be very important in fulfilling our faculty diversity goals. If we don't have ethnic minority individuals going into graduate school and getting their PhDs and making themselves eligible for faculty positions, it would become very difficult to diversify our faculty. Here's our real challenge. Here are the graduation rates. We're anticipating the red line will be 60.45% as our average undergraduate graduation rate. And you can see the deficits in the black, African-American, and Hispanic, Latino, and Native American populations. So this was from the fall of 13, that cohort group. And so this measures our challenge, and we have to continue to invest in the programs that I just mentioned in order to close this gap. The six-year graduation rate among the low-income students, the Pell-eligible students, is pretty strong. Both the retention and the six-year graduation rate. In terms of faculty diversity, we had a goal that in our strategic plan that by 2021 that 25% of our faculty would be faculty of color. And that line from where we were at the beginning of the plan to 2021, the blue line is the path of for the strategic plan, but the orange line is our actually what we have. So we're outperforming our original objectives in the strategic plan in diversifying our faculty. In terms of workforce, the whole idea of college these days is to make sure that we have a workforce with a growing state. And Jeremy Aguero's group applied analysis redid the economic impact study last year, and you can see here the value of higher education. By looking at the blue bar across there is what you would make with a high school diploma, and then as you add different degrees, you can see the average gain in wages, which is the market value of the education that these individuals get and then go into the workforce. Here,
Regent Page.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. Wouldn't that, do you know the number would be just for a college degree in these different categories versus UNR? How are they determining a bachelor's from UNR is 56, but a bachelor's degree from somewhere else wouldn't be 56?
Yeah, these are regional or national figures. They're not just UNR. We do an alumni survey 1 and 5 years out, and we ask for things like that, but it's hard to get representative numbers.
Okay, so this is not necessarily a UNR degree. This is a college degree.
That's correct.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
And this shows, this is also a national figure here, over the years of the unemployment rates of those with a high school education and those with college educations. Bachelor's degrees. And you can see even during the downtime, unemployment rate among high school graduates compared to college graduates is much higher. And even now, the unemployment rate among high school diploma holders relative to bachelor's degrees is quite different. So not only is the value of the salary potential higher, but so is the chance of getting a job. So some of these numbers came out of the Applied Analytics report. If we include all student jobs, et cetera, we've got income flow from the university to about 8,500 people. 74, this came from an alumni survey, 74% of the people who graduate from UNR are employed in Reno, which is a very good deal. You'll notice also that in the lower left corner that the state's population has grown over a period of time by 48%, whereas the enrollment in universities has grown 63%, which means we are getting a larger portion of the population into higher education. Looking at the future, we're anticipating that by 2023, just the economic impact of the UNR activity, the nonprofit business, will generate $144 billion in income for the region. And you can see in that little bar chart the pathway to that $144 million. In terms of research, it's very important to have a vibrant research program on campus. It provides a richer environment. Okay. I had way too many slides. So let me just finish by saying for the rest of the objectives. A research environment creates a more vibrant place for both undergraduate, graduate study, and we create new ideas for new businesses. In terms of engaging the community, we have accumulated many, many activities and agencies at the university to serve the state, and we have done this in an effective fashion. We are an entrepreneurial hub in Northern Nevada. The medical school has really become the medical school of Northern Nevada. We're reaching out to Elko and Carson City and around the whole region to expand our clinical platform, make more opportunities for students, and service to the communities in terms of health. And our Innovation Center is doing a phenomenal job at creating jobs, creating new businesses, and creating an opportunity to bring capital to support some of these startup businesses with over $50 million in capital for just some of the businesses that are located in our Innovation Center. So thank you very much. I hope you'll read the rest of the report. And what we will do after census, we will update all these figures to actual figures for the fall 20.
Thank you. Are there questions of President Johnson on what he's covered or slides that we jumped through? I know you all looked at it before the meeting, so. Let's see.
Our peer median four-year graduation rate is 29%.
Was that, sorry, Regent Trajak? I think he just.
Yeah, the median peer four-year graduation rate is 29%. Ours is 37.
Thank you very much.
Provost Conway. No.
Thank you very much, President Johnson.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We will now go to item number 23, handbook revision, state college admission requirements. President Patterson.
Thank you, Chair. And just as a quick reminder, this is an item that was heard by the board in the last meeting, and we received the input of the board prior to drafting a policy. And we had added some additional statistical information for the board that was requested. And working with Vice Chancellor Abba and Chancellor Riley and others, we had developed the attached policy for your consideration. It's written in a fairly simple changes, so the idea was to not dramatically change the existing language of the policy. Basically, what it is doing is moving the general admission standard of Nevada State from a 2.0 to a 2.5 and a corresponding test score associated with that as the primary criteria for admission. Then it also adds language that if students are accepted below that, and this is at our request, that those students will have certain requirements associated with college success programs. The third element is it provides us with an opportunity to look at high capacity issues associated with the college and to potentially gauge limited admissions in programs where we lack the capacity to substantially increase students. So those are kind of the three elements of the policy that have changed. We continue to experience steady growth, if not spectacular growth, even with the advent of the Promise Scholarship, which we would have expected to impact our freshman enrollment for some time period. Obviously, we expect more transfer students will start coming to the college and universities as those students start graduating from the two-year colleges in the next year or two. So that's the baseline for the proposal. I'd be happy to take questions or provide more background as needed.
Regent Trajak?
Second.
Second.
From Regent Trajak, second from Regent Lieberman. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries.
Thank you.
We will go to item 24, 2020-25 strategic plan and handbook revision, mission statement, Nevada State College. President Patterson.
Thank you, Chair. And, you know, I haven't been doing the lion's share of the work on this. The last major strategic plan that we developed was an initiative called Nevada State College 2020 back in 2012, 13. So one of the first things I asked Provost Vicki Shields to do when she came on board about 2 years ago was to take the leadership to develop a comprehensive strategic plan and done a huge amount of work. This has been a campus-wide effort with faculty and staff significantly involved. It will lead to significant implementation plans of the strategic plan. But I'd ask Dr. Vicki Shields to present the plan to the board. Thank you.
Good morning. Chair Geddes and the Regents and the President, thank you very much. I am very excited to share with you the strategic plan. This has been in the works for almost a year and a half, and it's been a very collaborative effort, and it is our first comprehensive strategic plan for the college. We've had academic plans before, but this is comprehensive for all the units. And in the strategic planning world, there's a great saying, it's plan your work for today and every day and work the plan. And so when I delivered this presentation at convocation, that came around again, we need to work the plan, work the plan. So that's when it doesn't sit on the shelf and it's a living document when you work the plan. So I want to walk you through the plan. You have the whole plan. This will be an abbreviated version, of course, and then talk more about the rest of the implementation at the end. Okay, so this was some of the ways that we got to this point. We had many information gathering sessions over the time period with many different groups and town halls with all the faculty and open forums with students. And then I had an external consultant help that I was very familiar with his work, and he worked the most closely with the provost office and group. And it was every time he came in, they kind of energized the process, and then we'd start again and get it going. So that was really helpful. There were working groups assigned to the different initiatives. Institutional research played a very central part, as always, in the whole thing. And then a strategic planning council was put together, and this will be a standing committee going forward. And they will do evaluation and assessment of the plan each year. Along for approval today is a slight revision to our mission statement. And so this is the mission statement and the plan. And really the slight revision is that our former mission said four-year programs. And since we have a master's degree now, we moved it to quality affordable degree programs without the four-year. Nevada State really didn't have a vision statement in the former plans. Before, we worked a lot on the vision statement. There was, at first, a very extended version of this, and then all of that material started going into the strategic goals that you'll see in a minute. So Nevada State College will deliver on its promise to Nevada by becoming a model of teaching excellence, a pioneer in innovative student support, and an agent of economic growth and social justice. That's our vision. So our core values, this has been quite a journey, speaking of embracing the journey. I think it's taken us this long to get our core values down because we feel that we have a very unique and special culture. And before I even came in as provost, the faculty said to me, we've got to keep our culture as we grow. We've got to keep our culture as it grows. And so part of getting to that core values, you know, why we get up in the morning, why we, what drives our work, took a while, but I think we're pretty happy with what we've got. So embrace the journey. We foster a culture of high-achieving teams and empower individuals to be the difference. Blaze trails. If we think there's a better way, we look at the research, trust our instincts, and try it. Climb mountains. We aspire to be experts in transforming the lives of our students and their families. We strive towards excellence in our jobs and advancement in our careers. And build bridges. Diversity is our strength. We treat each other with care and respect and help one another to be successful. So why is it called Delivering on the Promise? You know, our college was dreamt up around a dining room table between 1998 and 2002. And there were moments where the state didn't know if they needed a middle-tier state college. And it was a plucky group of people, and we've always felt like we need to deliver on our promise, not only to them, but to the state of Nevada. So we thought it was a very fitting title for the whole strategic plan. Now, to do a comprehensive strategic plan, we needed to come up with themes that would be comprehensive across the whole college. These are our five themes. Students, curriculum and instruction, organizational culture, that's where we're trying to be intentional about our culture, growth and capacity building, community engagement and economic development. So the culture thing comes around a lot. People are very concerned because they love our culture, and they don't want it to change too much. And I've always said you've got to be very intentional, and how much more intentional can you be than to actually put it into your strategic plan? So we wanted to build on the NC strategic goals with our goals, so we've brought that in. Each Nevada State strategic goal supports one or more of the strategic goals adopted by this board in 2018. So in the full plan that you have seen, there are many major initiatives under each one of these goals. But I wanted to present to the larger group here what these goals are. So for students, we will deliver on our promise to students by demonstrating leadership in academic and student support, improving student success for a highly diverse first-generation student population through innovation and evidence-based practices. Curriculum and instruction, we will deliver on our promise to innovate in curriculum and instruction by building socially relevant curricula that anticipate and are responsive to the regional workforce, are transformational in nature, and are committed to developing the whole student. We will deliver on our promise to nurture our unique organizational culture by cultivating a workplace that is inclusive, inspirational, characterized by meaningful work, and supportive of diverse perspectives. Growth and capacity building. We will deliver on our promise to steward our growth and capacity building by expanding the college in creative ways through public-private partnerships, governmental and sister institution collaborations, relationship-driven advancement practices, and strategic enrollment management. And finally, the fifth goal, community engagement and economic development. We will deliver on our promise to improve community engagement and economic development by forging strong relationships with business and community organizations, making a positive impact on the community through service-oriented programs and applied research, and creating the critical workforce to grow our regional and state economy. These were just some additional things that we have aspired to in our former accreditation and also former strategic plans that we just wanted to make sure were captured in this document. Okay, so the main metric, there'll be many more metrics that will come out of the initiatives and projects as we work through our work, but these are the major ones that we wanted in the full strategic plan. So the maximum headcount and FTE projections are based on our overall growth rate of 54% over the past 7 years, as well as an enrollment management strategy that attenuates our growth over time to facilitate institutional improvements and account for limitations to our classroom and office capacity. The resulting projection yields headcount and FTE increases of approximately 5% for each of the next 5 years and a total headcount increase of roughly 24% from fall 2020 to fall 2025. Student success, quality. The provision of a quality teaching and learning experience is a cornerstone of Nevada State's mission. In pursuit of this goal and in accordance with our accreditation standards, our aim is for 70% of senior-level Nevada State students to achieve proficiency or higher in their mastery of degree program learning outcomes. This is our internal assessment. The current mean for all programs is slightly above 60%. We also aspire for 90% or more of our students to continue to rate their overall educational experience as good or excellent on the NESI. This rating is 3% higher than the institutes in our Carnegie classification, both overall and in the Far West region. Progression. Retention and graduation rates have steadily climbed at Nevada State. For first-time full-time students from fall 2012 to fall 2018, we observed an 8 percentage point increase in one-year retention for first-time full-time students, which translates into a 13% increase in the number of students retained. Likewise, we have achieved a 15% increase in two-year retention, or 36% change, an 11% increase in third-year retention, which is a 31% change, and a 3% increase in the six-year graduation rate, bringing us to 19%. These data, coupled with new student success programs and initiatives, predict continued success in retention and graduation rates. Slightly larger increases are projected for second through fourth-year retention rates, as well as the six-year graduation rate, because they will be focused of, they will be the focus of future student success efforts. So in closing the achievement gap, I will point to, there's an error in this slide, but I'll point to that in a minute. In accordance to our mission, Nevada State has successfully narrowed the equity gaps in achievement among underrepresented populations. Given that our equity gaps do not always mirror the achievement differences exhibited by most institutions, example, the underperformance of white students in fall 2018, our goal is to ensure that all students are achieving at a comparably high level. To this end, based on continued programming to support underachieving student populations, the college aims to reduce retention and graduation equity gaps between our highest and lowest performing groups by half. So in the Black or African American population for six-year graduation rate on this slide, it just says 25% all the way across. That's an error. These were very small populations, so the numbers really should be 11%, 13%, 16%, 18%, 20%, and so they go up and down because the population is so small, and that's the real problem.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question on this.
Yes.
Regent Trachuk. Do we track the performance of minority males in any of the strategic planning?
Yes, we certainly will as we're drilling down. That will be an important part of our strategic enrollment management. So I think the unlike the President Solis's presentation yesterday, I don't think our males are less achieving, but we have too few of them. But we do need to drill into that a little more. But my impression right now is that they're not lower achieving, but we have too few of them. As of spring 2019, Nevada State has graduated over 4,500 students since the college's inception, including our largest ever graduating class of 597 students in 2018 and 19. The projected graduation numbers shown here are based on our growth in headcount and a modest increase in the total percentage of Nevada State students who earn a degree, yielding a total of 786 graduates by 2025. Research. Grant activity at Nevada State College has increased significantly in recent years, both in terms of overall funding for sponsored projects, approximately $3.1 million for 2019-20, which includes initiatives that promote student success and awards related specifically to faculty research, around $1.19 million for 2019-20. This research often emphasizes undergraduate participation. Based on anticipated growth in full-time faculty and student enrollments, we are projecting continued increases in funded research projects as shown here. Lastly, in 2016, Nevada State began hosting the annual Undergraduate Research and Creative Works Conference, which gathers students from a host of disciplines and universities, too, to present their research in the form of presentations and panel discussions. In 4 years, the number of student research contributions has varied from under 50 to over 80. By 2025, we are aiming to achieve a 50% increase over fall 2016 in participation. So what is happening right now is that all the working groups in the five themes are working to drill down to projects and deliverables and the metrics around those and how much each will cost in resources. So that's what's happening right now. And the implementation plan is the internal big plan that has all the projects and initiatives on it. And so that's running parallel with revealing the larger strategic plan. And that will be the ongoing plan for 5 years. This is just the composition of the Strategic Planning Council. We haven't had one of these before. And so it's now a new standing committee that will keep all of this going all the time. And I've got to chair that all the time, so I'll keep it going all the time. And this is just a graphic to show how we kind of split up the work amongst the groups. So each theme had an executive sponsor. And then the project manager is the provost office manager, Sita Salas. Then a team leader was appointed by each executive sponsor. And the group, the working groups were there. We also had the internal writing team, chaired by Gregory Robinson, and then an internal designer for the plan by Nick Klaus. And we really like the way it looks. Any questions or comments?
Any questions from the board or comments? We need motion for approval. Motion from Regent Page, second from Regent Del Carlo. Any questions or comments on the motion? Regent Del Carlo.
I thought it was a very informative presentation. Plus, it was really beautiful. You have such
Thank
a beautiful
you.
Campus. And I was just going to ask you how you would describe the culture, because I noticed it when I was there the first time, and I had my husband with me, and honestly, he noticed it. But how do you describe it?
I describe it as everyone comes to work and they understand that they are personally in charge of making it a good place to work for everybody else. And I've worked in a lot of places where everyone's pointing to everybody else why it's not a good place to work. And so that's really at the heart. And you know, we're lucky, we're still small enough that we can give very personal attention and access to employees, students, and everything, and I think that really contributes. So I think that was part of the worry. It, you know, we know that we can just come in and see Bart and Vicki whenever we need to, and we can all get that done, and they're worried that we wouldn't be able to operate like that anymore. So I think that's at the core of it. And we want to be innovative and nimble, which is never easy in higher education.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
We will now go to item number 25, Security Committee. Chair Page.
Thank you.
Mike.
The committee met. We had an introduction of the NC new Chief Information Security Officer, an update on the UNR July 5th incident, as well as an update on the Southern Command update, and I approve the committee. I move for approval of the committee recommendations except as a report, Mr. Chairman.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
So moved.
Second from Regent Lieberman. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries. Item number 26, Academic Research and Student Affairs Committee. Chair McAdoo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we met. We actually had a very productive meeting. We had several action items. Each of the action items passed unanimously. That included 7 new degree programs, an elimination of an organizational unit at DRI that's no longer needed, and elimination of a Bachelor of Arts in Spanish for Professions at UNLV that had low enrollment. We also approved in committee the 2 revisions to the board policy. One was about the Purple Heart fee waivers. The second one was Governor Gwynn's Millennium Scholarship GPA. And then we had 2 very excellent information items, and one of those was on the co-requisite implementation task force, and the other one was a financial aid report. That would complete my report, and I would move for approval of the committee recommendations and acceptance of the report.
Second. I have a motion and a second from Regent Page. Any questions or comments?
I do have a follow-up comment. In regard to the financial aid information report, if you didn't get a chance to look at that closely in our board pack, I highly recommend it. It was really good information, and I will have a new business item request at the end of the meeting in regard to that. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries. We'll go to item number 27, Business, Finance, and Facilities Committee. Regent Carter, do you have a disclosure?
Yes. So I was previously a student in the Gaming Innovation course at UNLV where I developed a casino game. If the game is marketed and sold, I'll be required to pay UNLV in the form of shared royalties pursuant to standard contract that all students in the course were required to sign. I'll receive no remuneration from UNLV. I disclose this relationship under NRS Chapter 281A, as recommended by the Nevada Ethics Commission. As this agenda item does not affect my interest, I'll be voting on the agenda item, and it's related to the one that was issuing bonds for the engineering building, UNLV.
That was a disclosure, but not an abstention, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Chair Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a little feedback. Can you turn off your mic? At the committee, we approved UNLV moving forward to issue $20 million in bonds for the engineering building. This is a follow-up to an approval the board made at a previous meeting in July, if I recall. We approved Nevada State College to extend its lease on the old vitamin factory that is on their campus, a $10 a year lease. We had already spent about $2 million in improvements, and it'll add the lease to another 10 years. We approved UNR selling some land and buying some land. We approved $3.2 million for UNR to borrow for the Mackey Stadium renovations, which the board will recall we approved litigation on that matter to comply with the ADA requirements. And that's the gist of what we did. And at this point, I'd recommend someone make a motion for approval. Thank you.
So moved. Motion for me to pay. Second.
Motion from Regent Page. Second from Regent Dubrava. Any questions or comments? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries. Item number 28, Audit, Compliance, and Title IX Committee, Regent Carter.
Chief Internal Auditor Joe Simberry presented an update on Internal Audit Department as well as compliance and talked about the Title IX update and the progress that it's making. We accepted the minutes and the reports for Change in Leadership, CSN, Purchasing Card Program at WNC, Hosting at NSHE, the Foundation at TMCC, Internal Audit Report, the Grant Management GBC Report, the Exception Report, and we accepted the work plan for next year. I move for approval and acceptance of the Audit, Compliance, and Title IX Committee Report. Mr. Chairman, this concludes my report.
I have a motion. Do I have a second? Second from Regent McMichael. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries. Item number 29, Health Sciences System Committee.
Thank
Regent
you,
Page.
Mr. Chairman. We thank Dean Barbara Ackerson for her service as dean. Introduction of Dr. John Fowles as the interim dean. They provided an update of things. They provided an update on things were going on in the school. Dr. Michael Gardner gave an update on the practice plan. Then we heard from Dr. Tom Swank on the UNL School of Medicine, and then physicians in rural Nevada. And then CSN gave a dental program update, and they will be coming back on future updates on that practice plan. With that, Mr. Chairman, I move for approval of the committee recommendations and acceptance of this report.
I have a motion. Do I have a second? Second from Regent Carvalho. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries. Item number 30, Community College Committee. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair Geddes. We met, and Vice Chancellor McKinnon gave his report. He introduced Caleb Cage, who's new to the system, congratulated B.J. North in her new role at the TMCC Institutional Advisory Council. He reported that the community colleges presidents participated in a summer workshop, and they collaborated and prioritized their work ahead. Under new business, we had Regent McMichael wants to discuss the coordination between the community colleges of helping students in emergency situations, such as organizing food banks and providing student grants at a future meeting. We had no public comment. Vice Chancellor McKinnon provided a handbook revision to the Nevada Promise Scholarship, and that was approved. And I move approval of the committee recommendation acceptance of this report.
I have a motion. Do I have a second? Second from Regent Lieberman. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes. We will go to item number 31, fiscal year 2019 student fee account balance report. CFO Klinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Regents. For the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer, here to present the FY19 student fee account balance report. This report comes out of changes that were made to Title IV, Chapter 10, Section 19 by the board in 2017. And at the time, the policy clarified the board's intent that any fees collected from students be utilized for the direct benefit of students who paid the fees, and that any student fees that remain at the end of the fiscal year in which they were collected be carried forward for up to 1 year unless a waiver is granted. And so this report shows you those exceptions. And what I will say is that for all of the institutions where you see those exceptions on this report, they either have a board-approved waiver or they are working with faculty and students to develop a plan per the policy. Now, Mr. Chairman, Regents, one thing I did want to point out on this report is Senior Vice President Jean Vogt from UNLV asked me a question about how the other institutions are reporting their account fee balances. And so we had a discussion at the Business Officers Council on Wednesday about that. And so it turns out that UNLV is presenting their information slightly different than the other institutions, in that what UNLV has done is where the board has approved these capital plans, they have moved those monies off into project accounts, if you will. And so they're not reflected in their report. And so I just wanted to make sure that the board understood that there is a difference there.
Thank you. Questions? Regent Perkins.
Mr. Chair? Thank you. I had a question about the student fees. Once the project is completed, does that student fee drop off, or does the student fee lower, or does it remain the same and go into another account, like you mentioned earlier, for maintenance or something?
So when you're talking about capital improvement fees, so in this case they would be dedicated to a specific project. And in a lot of these projects, in discussing this with the business officers, you may have multiple sources of revenue that fund particular projects. And so the way they account for those funds is they expend the most restrictive dollars first. But if there was any student capital fee funds left, it would go back into the capital improvement fee account and then be allocated for other projects.
Thank you.
Thank you. President Zaragoza, there's a couple of those balances there that appear quite high. I was wondering if you could address those.
Absolutely, if I could. I believe the balances that have been at least broached to me earlier has been some discussion on excess credit balance. And I'd like to kind of refer to column number 5, which establishes the annual expenditure report. So our annual expenditures on the excess credit fee, mostly for advising services, because these are kind of dedicated types of line items, is $1.3 million a year. Our carry-in or end of balance is going to be $1.1. So we've actually encumbered more than the balance available, so we're fully accounting for that ending balance. All other balances have been allocated according to policy to either debt retirement or capital improvement projects.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? I would say that the technology fee, we've talked about it in the past, there appears to be huge technology issues on the campuses. I'm wondering if that fee is generating enough for you to address the needs on campus for students having 3 or 4 devices and Wi-Fi and everything else that's out there. So if y'all could take a look at that, I'd appreciate it. All right. Thank you. With that, we will go to item number 32, new business. Regent McAdoo.
Yes. So I mentioned that the ARSA committee heard a report on financial aid. And one of the pieces of that was highlighted was the Silver State Opportunity Grant, which my understanding is that program is targeted to support low-income students and really our only fully need-based aid for students. So we were given a dollar amount in the meeting that I told the audience it shook me to my core, and it really should shake all of us to our core. And that is that the median income for independent students receiving the Silver State Opportunity Grant is $16,700. That, I don't know, it speaks volumes to me. And so I wanted to just make us aware of that. And because it is for supporting low-income students, I would really like for us to look at that program as being expanded and recommend that that the board develop budget priorities for the 2021 legislative session that we consider the Silver State Opportunity Grant in our enhancement request. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Regent McMichael?
Yes, I'd like to reiterate my earlier comments about the student grants for coordinating with all of the NSHE institutes so that we could find out whether or not a student in need from any part of the state can be helped so that we shouldn't have students living in their cars. I really think that's a disgrace, and we should find out if we do have that situation, that we can alleviate that as soon as possible.
Thank you. Any other new business? Seeing none, we will go to public comment in Elko.
No public comment from Elko.
Public comment in Las Vegas.
No public comment in Las Vegas.
Is there any public comment here in Carson City?
Hello, everyone. My name is Alexander Patry, and I am the president of the Student Government Association at TMCC. I just wanted to say thank you for this opportunity to attend the Board of Regents meetings. This is my second time attending a Board of Regents meeting. Last time was this June, and I feel like I am learning just as much. I also wanted to say thank you to President Dr. Hilgerson for her kindness and acceptance towards the student government at TMCC. Instead of feeling intimidation, I have only felt generosity and great guidance from our president and the rest of the faculty and staff at Truckee Meadows Community College. I'm excited for the next Board of Regents meeting, and I will see you all again soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment in Carson City? Seeing none, we do have lunch set up. It's outside. It's ready. It is a grab-and-go lunch if you want to grab it and take it to the airport or wherever you're headed. So it's there. I think you have one coming down there in Las Vegas. Sorry, Regent Hayes, you get nothing. And with that, we are adjourned.
Gosh, that was quick.